Tony Antosh, welcome. You've been working in the field of developmental disabilities for 4 decades.
Actually, more than that, almost 5 decades. Wow. At this point, 46, 47 years.
How much has changed since those early days for people with disabilities?
If you think back to the 1960s, there was really almost nothing that was organized in any form. So the only options were really to be in an institution or to be at home. None of the legislation that has created all of those services that we know existed back then. So if you look over the last maybe 30 years, there were a series of laws that were passed that really sort of created opportunities for people. The Vocational Rehabilitation Act was passed in 1973, and it was really the first time that people began to look at whether or not people with disabilities could work. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act was passed in 1975. Prior to that, in something like two-thirds of the states in the country, there was legislation that allowed public schools to exclude kids with disabilities from attending school. Of course, the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990, and what the ADA essentially did was mandate that segregation and discrimination based upon disability was illegal. But what it did at a very practical level was create access.
And 25 years after the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, challenges remain. Last year in Rhode Island, we signed a consent decree.
Yep.
With the U.S. Justice Department to settle violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that was after a Justice Department investigation found
Yes.
Rhode Island was unfairly segregating and underpaying people with developmental disabilities. They were doing that in something called sheltered workshops.
Yep.
You are involved in carrying out the agreement we signed. Can you just tell us what exactly is a sheltered workshop? But more importantly, how is Rhode Island complying with the agreement?
Sure. If I can just give some background, when the Department of Justice was investigating the state, which was in 2013, the basic findings were that even though we were providing support to people, most of the supports that we provided were done in segregated, sheltered settings. Because that's where the supports were, what Justice found was essentially that we were violating Title II of the ADA because we were not providing sufficient opportunities to allow people to make the choice to be in an integrated setting.
Tony Antosh, do you agree with that assessment?
I do. I think, you know, when you look at the history of the developmental disabilities movement, we built a series of community supports from houses to centers to a range of things that would allow people to lead meaningful community lives. What's happened over maybe the last 10 years up until maybe the past 6 months is that there has been a significant regression and movement away from that. And so funding decreased, which in turn caused lower staff ratios in agencies. And because of that, people had less options in 2013 than they had probably in 2003. And so what Justice found fundamentally is that the system that the state of Rhode Island was supporting was essentially a system of segregation. So the consent decree lays out a 10-year time frame that essentially says during those 10 years, resources will move from supporting people in segregated settings to supporting people who are working or leading daily lives in more integrated community settings. Rhode Island has certainly made progress in the sense that there is an attempt to redesign what the developmental disability service system looks like. There's an emphasis on finding individual jobs in competitive settings. There's a focus on creating different pathways that will lead to employment. And all of that is really, I think, at some level part of a bigger conversation, which is about what is truly a meaningful daily life for somebody with a developmental disability. And what we have found is that most people with disabilities, given the opportunity to work, given very reasonable and in most cases very inexpensive accommodations, people become significantly more productive, more self-sufficient, more independent, all of those things that all of us view as being the values of being a good citizen.
Tony Antosh, you lead the Sherlock Center at Rhode Island College.
Yep.
And you train people who work with those who have developmental disabilities and provide some direct services to families with developmentally disabled children. What are some of the biggest needs for families?
There have been literally hundreds of surveys of family needs. And the number one need that comes up in every survey is accurate information. Probably a week does not go by in my life where I'm not sitting with a person with a disability or a family member who says, I wish I knew that.
Knowledge about services available.
About services, for example, transitioning from school to adult life. I mean, when you and I did that, we had families that supported us. And so we knew about educational opportunities. We knew about employment opportunities. We switched from a pediatric health service to an adult health service. All of those things for people who have developmental disabilities are much more complex, you know. And so what families need, and school is very supportive and is very regulated, and all the services are mandated by law. In the adult world, that's essentially not true. And so as families and their family members transition from school to the adult world, oftentimes they are overwhelmed, and oftentimes they really do not understand how the adult system works. They don't understand the role that Medicaid plays. They don't understand the role that supplemental security income plays. They don't understand what all the agencies do. What we try to do is give families kind of a framework that will help them navigate that system in some way, shape, or form.
Where do we go from here? You know, the next 25 years, where are some of the next areas we need to make some improvements?
Now, I would say 25 years from now, the expectation would be that we would have, that people would have the same opportunities that you and I would have. Clearly, they need probably maybe a little more support, a little different support than you and I do. But the vision is that people will lead the same kind of life that you and I lead.
Tony Antosh, thanks for joining me. I'm Kristen Gourlay, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Healthcare reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.